Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we're recording on another Sunday. It's a sunny Sunday, though.
Yes, not like the past few that have been very, very gray, the classic November gray.
Yeah. Where I work, we do star parties every month when it's somewhat warm out. November, we consider somewhat warm. We don't do them in the dead of winter anymore because no one would come.
Oh,
well, yeah. They would, but like the staff is super cold outside. The telescopes can't work below like 25 degrees Fahrenheit or so.
Oh, like the lenses get messed up?
Yeah. So we don't do them, but we have them in November. But typically you can't deploy telescopes because it's so cloudy. Like in Minnesota, I think the statistics are like 80% of days in November are cloudy.
Yeah, which...
Yeah, and you had a good suggestion last weekend where you're like, I think you need to bring out your sad lamp.
And did you?
I did.
Oh,
yes.
Good.
Because I have the one where asked to chew the cord.
Didn't we try to fix that one?
But it was too chintzy.
Yeah, the wires are too thin.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get them stripped properly. And
yep.
We couldn't get them to stay in the plugs.
Yeah, like... the magic plugs that you get at the hardware store where you can repair things like my lava lamp, the Asta.
We've done it to your lava lamp. We've done it to the double twinkle lights from the 60s mm-hmm. down here.
Yep.
The lamp in my room. And I shorted out the power chair.
You did.
Upstairs when I tried it.
Because it draws too much power, I think.
Yeah. There were sparks. There was smoke. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
But luckily with enough replacement parts, it all worked out. And now the power cord is kept safe inside a very broad tube
mm-hmm.
That we use for the rain barrels.
Yeah.
We've done it other places.
Yeah. We're really good with small appliances and rewiring or just fixing them.
Although I do want to bring the fireplace that my great grandpa made to a professional.
We just need to find an electrician friend is what we need to do.
Well, yeah.
And pay them.
Because it's not, well, yes, compensate people for their labor.
Yes.
But
or trade it. Like maybe you could plant something for them.
I called a commercial electrician like that has done other work around the house. And they're like, no, we don't do that. So that's why they suggested a lamp repair place. And then I never heard back from them.
And it's so weird because you brought in my old sewing machine to a sewing machine place for a Christmas present a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But it was literally like some guy's garage.
It was. But he also worked for like all the theaters. He had like stacks for like the Guthrie or like for their costume departments.
And then it stopped working. I know. I do want to give a shout out to John from the Avenging Hour. He has the Rockin' Pneumonia.
Oh, no.
And the Boogie Woogie Flu. Probably just the Rockin' Pneumonia.
Why is it called that?
It's a Johnny Rivers song from the 70s.
Oh.
He has pneumonia. So, well wishes to him.
Yeah. My goodness.
No one wants that. But I know that he listens to all of our episodes. So, best wishes to him. Best wishes to our temporary foster Clarice. So she went to a permanent foster home yesterday.
I know, and I'm getting choked up just thinking about it.
I was sobbing after she left, and then I was laughing. Like my emotions were all over the spectrum because I'm like, it's so silly that I'm sobbing over this bunny.
Right, who's going to a foster.
Oh, and a great home. Like her the foster home is the one that took her in originally. Then we got her because she didn't have space. But her two fosters were adopted.
Yeah.
So Clarice has a big space and...
Once Mr. Noodles gets spayed or neutered, then they can cohabitate.
Spayed. When she gets spayed too, I think.
No, she said in December after Noodles.
Oh, okay.
So then like they can get used to it. And then after her spay, like actual bonding can take place.
And that'd be great because Clarice is such a sweet bun. So
she really is.
Yeah.
And her binkies and her zooms were so fun.
And she was starting to fill out. Like you did a good job getting her weight up, which is what was needed.
I mean, when they told me unlimited pellets, I'm going to keep that dish full.
Yeah. So.
And she ate some hay.
Yep. She's getting more used to that. She's getting used to treats.
Yes. So. Both garden sticks and metal loops. I think the sprinkle was a little bit odd for her.
Mm.
Like, she didn't seek it out. She didn't eat it when it was in the litter box. Like, some of it went out when I changed boxes. But she ate a bunch of stuff. She was a good drinker.
Yes.
She was very neat.
Yeah.
Except for when she was digging in her litter box, but then she gets over it.
Yeah.
And I would never, was never quite sure if she was eating the litter.
But she, unlike our bunny, she really didn't chew things.
No.
She didn't dig at carpet.
She would sort of like grip things to throw them out of the way, like the comic books I was reading.
Yes.
But there weren't, wouldn't be teeth marks on it.
No.
Oh, Nora just hunkered down even deeper.
Oh.
Nora is on her trunk space underneath the high chair.
Yeah.
So it's something about they just feel protected under there for some reason. Yeah.
Don't know.
But she also likes being elevated.
Yeah.
So since it's like 10 degrees outside, I think, well, to be fair, I think the high is like 19.
Mm-hmm.
But with it being chillier in the basement, the buns will only spend their time on the carpet scraps, like the shag carpet scraps, because mm-hmm. it's more insulated for them.
Yeah. So we had Black Friday and Small Business Saturday. I worked on Friday because, fun fact, tons of museums, the busiest weekend, at least for our museum, is Thanksgiving weekend every year.
Yeah.
The 3 days are crazy. So even though we're part of a university, it's a university holiday, a select few of us full-time staff get to work and then get regular time plus time and a half. So, hey,
nice.
Not complaining about 20 hours of pay for 8 hours of work. So I stopped at our regular comic store, which was having a one-day sale, and got 25% off some stuff.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, we went to a brand new restaurant.
Saturday Dumpling Company.
Yes.
Well, they've existed, but only in a takeout capacity.
Yeah, like you could get frozen product or a few hot products.
Their scallion pancake burritos were big hits with us. Like, we had one on the way to Fall Con. I think we had them on the way to Spring Con as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're delicious. And that's, we both got the same thing again this time. But it was a different sort of filling.
It was. It was a pork filling.
Yeah. Beef.
No, we had pork.
No, there was beef in mine.
Oh, I got the pork one.
Oh, okay.
And a big chunk of ginger
that
was sauteed in the sauce. So it looked like, you know how pork can get that brownish look if it's like the end of a loin roast or something. And I was like, oh, it's just a big hunk of pork. And I chewed it for like a minute and then my eyes were watering. And I'm like, I think it's just ginger. I don't know if pork is in this. And I had to spit it out. But it cleared the sinuses that day.
Yeah.
So,
it was delicious. They've got a great space on Central.
Yes, which is Northeast Minneapolis for people not local. Like, it's Northeast has really bloomed, I'd say, since I lived there in the mid 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, totally different. Like, just so many great restaurants and stores.
Yeah. And I think the theater on St. Anthony, Maine is not that far away. And that's where, oh, I saw that movie with Kate Winslet and
Eternal Sunshine.
Cherise. I am so sorry. I cannot.
And then you're surprised that she is in a Mary Queen of Scots film in like 2019. You're like, there was one. I'm like, it's garbage.
Oh.
Watch the 1972 one with Vanessa Redgrave.
But it's the one where Kate Winslet is a paleontologist.
Oh.
And they're lesbian lovers.
So we also went to a comic store.
Hot Comics.
Yes. All of their back issues, like every single back issue and every single long box, $1.
And some of them were marked for higher, much higher than $1.
I got Silver Age Green Lanterns for $1.
Yeah.
And they're zany. It's Silver Age.
Yeah.
So
they were grateful that we made space. And I was like, Mar, I'm crabby because I didn't write down the numbers of the Defenders issues that I have.
And you barely doubled up.
Yeah, I think out of a bunch, there are only two duplicates.
Yeah, not bad.
No.
And it's like the original Defenders run from the 70s.
Yeah. So, and then they didn't have much with the Captain America run.
Yeah.
The Grunwald era.
Yeah.
And the D-Man era.
Yep.
So, which is fine.
And I found a bunch of Green Lanterns.
I got a Defenders of the Earth number 2.
Which is a current, not Marvel Defenders.
No, it's Mad Cave. They do the Flash Gordon comics.
Okay.
So I've been getting Flash Gordons, and then like in the back they have the timeline thing. Mm. So there's Flash Gordon Quarterly, the first one. There's only the one about the fall of the King of Vulcan, like the winged people. And Defenders of the Earth is another series, and
it has the Phantom.
It has the Phantom. It has the magician dude and another dude in green. Mm. So I think it's either a different plot line or from before, or just in the back of the Flash comics, it has like, this is what they used to be way back when.
Mm. Yeah.
So that was a fun. I've been enjoying the Flash comics. So I thought I'd pick that up since our regular store doesn't have them that far back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That'd
be fun. Yeah, so
we bailed on going to the American Swedish Institute for their Tompton exhibit
because, well, they have it every year. They always have a Find the Tompton.
No, but this is about Tomptons. Like, it's a much bigger thing. Okay. Like, there is a like 8-foot wide bowl of porridge in a kitchen.
Oh,
with a gigantic pat of butter on it.
So, by the time we would have gotten there, we would have had like 45 minutes,
right?
Which is not worth the price of admission.
No, or the stress of finding parking.
Yeah.
So we'll hopefully go at some point soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, then we came home. We were with the buns.
Yep.
They hopped up on, Nora actually loafed on the couch with us, which was surprising.
Yeah. So. First time she's ever done that, which we've had them almost 4 years.
She's really weird to think about.
And her foster said, oh, she loves coming up and just watching TV in bed with me.
Yeah.
Like, she'll lay there. And we have never seen it. We have for years been enticing her, like, come on up, Nora. Nick can't bother you up here. He seriously won't find you. And she never takes us up until last night.
Yeah.
And she was watching Andor with us. Andor, which is sort of starring Scott Free.
No.
we're finally watching that. And it's good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. Like, the first couple episodes, slow burn, where you're like, okay, you're building to something.
It's enough world building.
And then after the second episode we watched, which was episode 4 last night, we looked and there were like 12 episodes.
And we're like, oh, that's so many more than we're used to.
Yeah.
Because you were anticipating 8. I was thinking 10.
Yep. And I was like, wow, okay. And season 2 comes out in like April next year. Oh. So
it's either 50% more episodes than you were expecting, mm-hmm. and 20% more episodes than I was expecting.
Yes.
Poor Lower Decks is still on probably 10 episodes.
It is.
In its final season, and it's so good.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about Star Trek. We're here for Alpha Flight.
No, that'll be a different week.
Yes. This is our first Alpha Flight episode in a while. Actually,
yeah,
it's been, let me look,
shouldn't it have been a month
nearabouts? We skipped a week. We have not had Alpha Flight since November 5th, so yeah, about a month.
Okay.
And oh, we should do a special announcement because it just went live right before we started recording. There is a special Alpha Flight virtual program for the Uncanny Experience happening on December 22nd, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And you can get the Zoom link to the webinar by donating at least $5 to Outfront Minnesota, which is a phenomenal LGBT plus organization that does advocacy. They do lobbying in terms of our legislature.
They helped legalize gay marriage in Minnesota. Like, we were state number 11 or 12. I think Rhode Island beat us by a few weeks.
Yeah. They maintain a fund to help people move here, especially trans people.
Right.
Trans brothers and sisters who are not in great states. They actually have a fund and it has a waiting list.
Yeah.
Right now.
Because we are an island in a sea of red.
Yep. So they do great work, and I worked with their development department, and they're so honored that we selected them. So I know that there are so many charities out there. It's the holiday season. That's why I kept it at $5. So it's still affordable for folks who want to come.
It's a stocking stuffer to say a donation was made in your name. Like, in an era of consumerism, like, we don't all necessarily need more things.
Right.
So this is a great way to still give a gift to someone. Just say a donation was made in your name to this organization that does really great things.
Yeah. So I hope everyone considers it. I tried to time it for people from around the world. So hopefully for some of you, it's not the middle of the night. Like, if you can't come to the Uncanny Experience, at least you can come and have some fun with some of us. We have The Many Loves of Aurora with Demanda Martini. We have North Star's Activist History with Mr. Scott Free. We have This Is Your Life. Wait, This Is Your Mess with Madison Jeffries.
Oh.
And that is Chad from Grey Malkin Lane. And we have Leah Williams coming for our happy hour. So she's going to pop in. And since she wrote North Star in Aurora, she's going to come. We're going to talk about what we love about Alpha Flight and also the characters. So,
she's a big deal.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
So grateful.
Yeah. And her program at Uncanny was so good. And so, like, talking to her is just a joy.
So she'll be joining. People are able to submit questions. It'll be in a Zoom webinar format because I'm hoping that we get tons of people in. But when you get tons of people in a Zoom, like, it'd be so hard to give everyone a turn to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know a lot of people will be excited. So there's going to be half an hour of, like, programming, like 10 minutes per concept that I listed. And then we roll into, like, a happy hour.
That's so fun.
Yeah, I think it should be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's December 22nd, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. So it sort of fits in with a lot of people having time off, too, on a Sunday. So come chill with us for a good cause.
Absolutely.
All right, the issues. We have issues 18 and 19, because I have been planning out this coverage and trying to group issues together that make the most sense.
Yeah. So this is an arc focused on a character who's not part of the main team yet.
No. So issue 18 is entitled, How Long Will a Man Lie in the Earth Ere He Rot? It's from January 1985. Our writer and artist is John Byrne. Inks, Bob Wiechek. Coloring, Andy Yankus. Letterers, Rick Parker. And our editor is Denny O'Neill. You ready to dive in?
I think so. I'm trying to think of the word for, like, in those Georgian era books or whatever, they have, like, a little quote by something else preceding each chapter.
Oh.
I feel like that's what this title is.
Probably.
Like, John Byrne is trying to make it do double duty of...
He's really Roy Thomasing it.
It's a title, and it's also a little snippet of something to give you a taste of a theme.
All right, so Heather holds up one of Guardian's spare cloth suits to herself and considers the reflection in the mirror as Puck approaches from behind her.
The page is well designed. Like, she's more in profile, but you get the full reflection and you can see Puck in the background, which I might have missed when I was reading this the first time. Because when he's like, luncheon is served, I thought that was just like the boarding house mother.
Oh, although as she is the team leader, Puck is concerned she will don the uniform and try to join the team in battle. Heather, in her capacity as leader, then pivots to trying to get the team back together and lets her fingers do the walking. North Star declines the invitation due to Aurora no longer wanting to be his superhero partner. Also, there's a hot man in a swimsuit in the background as North Star fields this call from his pool.
Yeah,
he has a himbo.
And an acquaintance.
A good friend.
Yes. All damp and glistening from the pool to answer the phone first. What a life.
When Heather reaches Michael Tuyungman's office, she is told by his administrative staff that he has been gone from the office for 2 days after a young woman burst into his office and used his superhero name when addressing him.
Although, to back up a bit, when North Star says no, and Heather is like, that toffee-nosed little jerk, is that a slur or is that just a name?
Maybe it's just a cute little toffee nose.
Oh.
Or maybe he likes eating ass.
See, that's where I thought it was going.
I could go for some toffee. Toffee is a very winter sort of, like it's a warm sort of confection.
Because you have to,
I don't want a toffee in the middle of summer.
Then it's just sticky.
Yeah.
The seasons of candy.
Yeah. Turkish Delight.
Oh, you did get me a tin of Turkish Delight.
Yeah.
That when we watched the BBC Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yes.
Which is so good. Dear listeners, please comment if you have also seen the BBC Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
If you have run across the double tapes at an antique store or thrift store for a dollar.
By Wonderworks with the intros for Jacob Have I Loved and Anne of Green Gables. And the Girl of the Limberlost. But it's so good. And the woman who plays the White Witch is just amazing. Well, like terrifying, but then can go sweet. But that is actually terrifying.
It gives me Return to Oz vibes.
Which I've never seen.
You need to watch it. It's very freaky. In Calgary, Shaman and Elizabeth are examining the skull she found. Remember, she was part of that dig squad, found a skull, and she's like, shit, I guess I need to get my dad.
Yeah, there is a nice panel of a recap there.
So, he's confirming it has spirit energies. The accompanying police inspector wonders why only Elizabeth saw the apparition emerge from the skull, but Shaman Demir isn't giving an answer. He's like, I'm not going to... Something's happening with my daughter. I need to investigate it more, but I'm definitely not tipping my own hand.
And he's also not saying that she is his daughter either.
No.
He catches himself and addresses her as Miss Two Youngman. And he's in like full shaman team outfit.
Yep.
So other folks may not know of his normal identity to put the two and two together. He demurs and Elizabeth is like, I can tell that you're just procrastinating.
But then he tells Elizabeth, hey, we're going to figure this out together.
Yeah.
Now we go to another part of town. A cranky old man named Lucas Stang is mean to his nurse and his great granddaughter, Emily, who chastises him for being nasty.
Yeah. And she's trying to be sweet and nice. And like, you're the only family I ever know of. Like, everyone else is dead.
Yeah. He sort of lays into her and says he's only been aware of her for a year. She isn't in his will, so he doesn't know why she's still around. And that's why she's like, well, I'm your relative.
Right.
I need to take care of you. We're each other's only living relatives.
You're all I've got.
Yeah.
We can be a real family.
So she leaves her great-grandfather and goes to the kitchen to make some eggs, which transform into a horrible egg monster behind her. as she reflects that Stang only got nasty with her once he found out they were related.
Right. So she's thinking it's some sort of defense mechanism of like pushing away the people that he's related to for some reason. That is not clear to her as of this moment. Yeah.
Upon seeing the egg monster, she calls the police to report the aggressive scrambled eggs.
She like is pouring milk directly into the pan.
Not a great way, honey.
No.
Because it's so weird, the police loop in Shaman and Elizabeth, who immediately transport, thanks to the medicine bag, to Stang's house. Emily answers the door, and Shaman confronts the entity, which appears to be some haunted, monsterized scrambled eggs. He moves to stop the growth and contain what is already present in the house. After achieving his goal, he thinks the eggs were a diversion for something more nefarious. Have you ever made eggs that just got out of control?
Actually, yes. I think you were around for it. It was in a cast iron. I was just frying eggs, like sunny side up or something. Mm. And something popped. Like there was enough of an air bubble beneath that like egg yolks got stuck to the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how that happened.
No.
That is the wildest egg story I've got.
My wildest egg story. So, you know, when you're a kid and your tastes change or you're just not into something.
Yes.
Like all of a sudden. So one Saturday morning, like my mom made me scrambled eggs and I was in the living room watching TV, but I didn't feel like finishing them. But my mom made me. I had to sit there until I finished them. And it was hours.
Oh.
Like they were cold and nasty. And I could not eat any sort of cooked egg for years after that because it made me sick to my stomach.
And it's my go-to breakfast.
Yes. So when you're like, do you want eggs? And most of the time I'm like, no, it's because of that.
Yeah.
So
it has left a mark.
Yep. So after finding out Stang is still in the house, Shaman goes to chat with him. Like, he didn't know this old dude was kicking it. Stang reveals that an evil power has taken everyone he ever loved from him and that he will die soon. But Emily will need to die first. Real bleak, Lucas Stang. Then he blasts Shaman. Again, real rude. This guy is not pleasant to be around. Emily is similarly possessed and blasts Elizabeth, who finds she can resist the attack.
Yeah, the energies sort of swirl around her and through her, and then she can redirect them.
So Elizabeth clocks Emily in the face. Shaman, looking on, realizes Elizabeth's mystic powers have manifested. To counter Emily's possession, he reaches into his medicine bag and throws some powder at her head. Reality blinks, like, they're like, what? Then they awaken in a ruined house with Emily restored to her normal self.
They're like little Lucky Charms that came out of the bag.
The demon who is causing all this trouble is identified as Ranak. Ranak. Even though Ranak is defeated, Shaman and Elizabeth need to figure out what is going on via some time travel.
Yeah, there's something that happened a century ago.
Yes.
With the great-grandfather.
Yep. In the Northwest Territories, Doug waits for Snowbird, who hops up to him in the guise of a white bunny.
I saw the bun. I'm like, oh, it's hello.
And then she assumes her goddess form.
I was so, like, oh, it's just Snowbird.
This Alpha Flight project that I'm working on, the first announcement will be at the December 22nd event if people want to hear a little bit about it. It is so hard with Snowbird in particular because do you call her Anne? Do you call her Snowbird? Do you call her Narya?
Oh.
I just have defaulted to Snowbird and then I'm like, in her goddess form, which is Narya, technically.
Right.
Too many fucking names. She cannot deny her love for Doug Thompson, but decides to show him her dark, horrifying side, which she describes as her true face.
And it's shadowy. There's some glowy eyes yep. in it. Like, good for her. But also, like, sure, she has feelings for him, but can't. Like, she's pretty clear of, like, I can't love you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, where did that dialogue go? I've considered I cannot return that love. I wish I could, but I have not the means. And he, not good with boundaries. He kisses her unprompted without consent. And then, like, something happens within her. The human half unlocks.
Tingles.
Yes, there's some tingling happening. Which is gross because she's only six, but has the intellect of a grown woman, but is only six. Like,
it's so gross.
Why would that be a thing? Unnecessary.
It's a John Byrne thing.
So.
Don't worry. We get another problematic thing in the Mantlo run.
Yeah. So she's like, oh, I guess I do love you. But also my shape is just a construct. And then does the face thing.
So some letters from this issue.
Oh, yeah.
Corey Daniel Caponero of Calgary was very upset about Mac's death, even going to the point of accusing Marvel of doing this because they're a bunch of Americans.
Oh.
Editorial rightly pointed out that the writer who killed Mac was, in fact, Canadian. Otherwise, the feedback for issues 12 and 13 are very positive, including some high praise for the way in which Heather's grief dream was executed.
Right. That was such a good series.
Any series of panels. Any main takeaways from this issue?
From this one? Yeah. This is our second Great Beast interaction.
Well, I'd have to go back.
Third.
Yeah. We're nearing the end of the Great Beast bullshit.
Yeah, because then there was Tundra that took the team and Marina's water funnel did its thing.
Yep.
Then there was Snowbird and another one. in the snowblind issue. Yes. So this is number three, and this one's got teeth. Lots and lots of teeth.
So this is really going in a different direction. Like, we were very water-based in the previous issues.
Yeah, sort of developing Marina a little bit.
And Heather as a team leader, like, diving in her jeans to try to rescue that baby. Which can't be comfy swimming in jeans. Like,
and we find out that she's still recovering from that.
Yeah. So she's trying to embrace her role as a leader, and she's doing her best, but
trying to get the team back together.
Like, she strikes out with no North Star, like, no interest from him. He needs to fuck that dude. And then
his social calendar is full, and it is with that guy's ass.
And then Shaman is just gone. Like, he's not appearing in his office.
So they go to find them.
So issue 19, you ready?
Yes.
The issue is entitled turn again, time in thy flight, ...
See, this is what really makes it seem like it's not a prologue. It's not an epitaph.
A tease?
No, I'll figure it out.
So we're in February 1985. Our writer and artist are John Byrne. Inks, Keith Williams.
Yay, Keith Williams.
Yeah. Who we will meet, the person that he did the commission for in two Elf Flight episodes. Gilded Lily. But this is it. Keith's first time on the book. I actually had him sign this issue for me because we'll get to it. But I think it's a rather important and fun appearance. Our color is Andy Yankus. Letterer, again, is Rick Parker. And our editor is Jenny O'Neill. So something to know, and we'll get to this in 10 more issues. So John Byrne and Jenny O'Neill had a, like, writer-editor relationship. Mm-hmm. So when John Byrne goes off the book, so does Denny.
Oh.
And Bill Mantlo comes in with his editor, Carl Potts, because right now Mantlo is writing Incredible Hulk with Carl Potts as his editor. So they sort of swap titles because Byrne goes to Hulk, Mantlo comes on over to Alpha Flight. All right. Shaman's hunch about Rannoch has led him to the site of Fort Calgary, where the skull at the center of the mystery was dug up. You remember Fort Calgary.
Sure.
Because it's near there where they encountered the X-Men.
Oh, they did, at the Stampede, they did.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
also, so epitaph is what's written on your tombstone.
Yes.
An epigraph is those few lines of poetry or, like, classic literature that goes in front of a chapter. It's usually, like, 20 words or so, 40 words or so.
Okay.
So that is the word that I was struggling for a bit ago.
Heather and Puck have joined Shaman and Elizabeth at the site of Fort Calgary. But although Puck speaks seven languages, he doesn't know Cersei. And as a consequence, cannot understand the spell Shaman is using. Elizabeth, meanwhile, reflects on her growing relationship with mysticism, which only began a week prior. Like, we barely know Elizabeth at this point.
It's true.
Shaman senses to his disappointment that defeating Rannoch was not the end of the battle and that the portal is still open. So Puck correctly guesses that this is because Lucas Stang is still alive. And Shaman says Lucas is even still alive because he did an unspeakable evil a century prior.
And we do get a lot of text boxes, thought boxes from Elizabeth, like contemplating her father, like trying to reconcile the fact that, like, this is the guy that broke the promise and couldn't save my mom, but mm-hmm. also he's doing superhero things, and, like, the mental image that she had built up of him isn't matching reality. So there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance that she's working through, and like a little bit of working through some trauma, perhaps.
Yeah.
And all the anger towards her dad.
Yeah. So Elizabeth, she wants to be on their way. And Shaman thinks to himself that she might be someone who's foretold, but his thinking is interrupted by the arrival of Snowbird.
Hello.
She insists on coming along as defeating Rannoch as part of her Earthbound mission to defeat all of the great beasts. But then she bows to Elizabeth and addresses her as the promised one.
Yeah, which is a whole other shock to Shaman being like, well, all signs are pointing to her being super special.
Yeah. After Puck's prompting, Shaman explains that Elizabeth is the embodiment of good on Earth. However, to be sure, Elizabeth must reach into Shaman's medicine bag and withdraw the coronet of enchantment, which she does. Like, it's the glass slipper moment.
Yeah, the prophecy of 300 generations is realized in Elizabeth. And she can look into the bag and not go crazy,
yep,
like Smart Aleck did.
So she places it on her head and she's transformed into Talisman.
Oh, the outfit is so ridiculous.
In explaining the prophecy for telling her coming, Shaman says there are great and terrible parts to it, but doesn't really elaborate. He's like, there's no time to explain. We gotta go to the past right now. Sorry.
Yeah. Ooh. And Heather's like, my legs are still healing. So Puck is like, you stay here.
Yes.
Like, it's the leader's job to worry.
So Calgary was basically an old Western town 100 years prior.
It was. Did you catch what's written on the big barn?
No.
It is the barn store. Like, oh, I'm sorry, the barn stable. But it's got lights on everything. There's a store called John Ellis. There's Grand Central Hotel. So, yeah.
All right, so the team is garbed in their modern clothes, but Shaman uses a spell to help them blend in. He's like, I have some powders for that. Look, magic.
Yeah, because there's a deputy that's walking by and is like, why are you all wearing weird things? So they look transformed. Puck is 3 feet taller in order to blend in.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth can sense where they have to go as a nauseous feeling overcomes her. Inside a barn, two men are holding a First Nations woman as a hostage and are forcing her grandfather to summon Ranak. The First Nations elder does so, and Ranak moves to attack young Lucas Stang, but he and his companion Zeb have necklaces of protection to keep the beast at bay. Ranak says that in response to their summons, he has to give them what they wish for: money, women, and power.
So this is Zebediah Chase is the other guy. So he's older. He seems to be his idea to summon a great beast. Get busy conjuring this Ranak fellow. And then they think that they can just get rich.
Yes.
By all the things. So Snowbird sees this happening. It's like, stand aside. I need to go fuck up their shit.
Yeah. So Ranak makes the riches and a beautiful woman appear. And Zeb tries to grab it, but he can't. And Ranak's like, oh, well, by the way, if you want to grab that, you got to take off the necklace.
Right. The same necklace that's protecting you from my eye blasts,
yes,
is the same that's protecting you from touching this gold
stuff.
So
Zeb is an idiot and does it, and then he's consumed by Ranak, who takes over his body.
Yeah.
And that's when Snowbird bursts in, having seen enough and knowing she must stop Ranak.
And like, Ranak's head is just like a flowy bit of flesh, like the real tattered edges and all teeth. And then when Zebediah clutches the woman by her shoulders, mm-hmm, the hair parts, and her, instead of a face, it's just teeth.
Ugh.
So many teeth.
So Ranak blasts Snowbird out of the bar, and he's like, oh no, you don't. And Shaman leaves to attend her, meaning Elizabeth has to face Ranak alone. Like, Puck is behind her, and she's blasted by Ranak.
And Puck knows his limits.
Yeah, he's like, I can't do much here.
Yeah.
He roughs up Lucas Stang.
Yeah, and Elizabeth is like, I'm going to do something, and nothing's happening. And that's when she gets blasted, but can do the same redirect again.
Mm-hmm.
Feel the energies flowing all around me, but they're not hurting me. They're making me strong and able to strike back.
So, the elder comes back in and he says only Stang can stop Ranak.
Yeah.
So Stang picks up a piece of Zeb's discarded necklace, attaches it to a bullet, and fires at Ranak, who transmits his agony into Snowbird. She is going through it in this issue.
Yeah, there's some sort of connection between her and I feel and the great beasts. So instead of just being like locked away, this is more like a death thing.
So Stang then burns the hollow shell of Zeb's corpse as instructed, which is the future site of the dig where Elizabeth discovers that same skull.
Oh.
Yes.
Zeb had died a chase, causing trouble in so many centuries.
Yeah.
Two is the number of centuries.
Elizabeth realizes that Stang actually doesn't have to live in fear of his loved ones being taken away from him anymore. But Shaman says she cannot tell Stang that because of the nature of time travel, like it'd fuck up the timeline.
Right.
So in the closing moments of the issue, Snowbird addresses Elizabeth as the Talisman, and that's where she gets her superhero name.
Yeah. Although it doesn't, I was thinking about this earlier, calling someone the Talisman doesn't seem like that person has a whole lot of agency.
No.
Like,
and we'll see what the powers do to Elizabeth going forward.
Oh.
Like the great and evil stuff.
Oh.
Well, Shaman's not wrong. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Shit goes down. Shit goes bad because of the Talisman powers.
Part of me wants to like her outfit, but like
it's very iconic in a you will need so much body tape way.
If it wasn't for that, like the cutouts around her hips.
I like the angles. I really like the use of angles in it, but also
like angles and bra colors. Yes. But the unnecessary revealingness of it.
Yeah.
Like over-sexualized aspect.
Like it's giving me a Christina Aguilera, Genie in a Bottle, like the exposed midriff thing.
I haven't seen that.
So sheltered as a child.
I know.
In the letters page.
Oh.
Apparently over 100 letters were received asking about the discrepancy in the size of Puck's two ears, which I have never fucking noticed in my life.
What?
Editorial explained this due to Puck's rough and tumble past, and the difference was intentional because he has cauliflower ears.
Oh.
Yes. So people were like, hey, John Byrne keeps screwing up. One ear is bigger than the other. And they're like, no, like that's an intentional choice we made.
Oh, that's fun.
So overall, I think this issue was a really good payoff on the previous one, which, if you boil it down, is pretty silly because it has an egg monster. So we go into the distant past and sort of see how one's actions have consequences in the future.
And if someone's going to summon a great beast, maybe don't.
Yeah.
Like, maybe find another way to get rich.
Yeah, and like in the case of Lucas Stang, he was nasty to First Nations people for no reason at all. And as a consequence, he has a lonely, bitter life.
Yeah.
So take that. It seems like Talisman as an entity is more powerful than Snowbird.
Yes.
Also,
when did Snowbird learn of this prophecy? Was it just...
She's six.
She's only six.
Yeah.
And it was a part of, like, Shaman's teachings in those intervening years.
It must have been.
Like, hey, here's all the information around who you are. Or is it something that's, like, just divinely downloaded into her brain?
Yeah. It also gives a new facet to the relationship between Shaman and Talisman.
Oh.
Like, she obviously does not like her father. He keeps withholding info from her.
Yeah.
And she's the more powerful person now.
And, yeah, and he's not what she expected. It's like, she thought her dad was just going to be, like, some loser.
Yes.
But no, like... There are virtuous qualities to Shaman that she wasn't anticipating.
Like, he's a world-renowned doctor.
Right. Like, he has the air of command in his voice.
Yes.
Like, that was a thing that was in there. So, yeah.
Decent two set of issues.
Yeah, and some good character development starting here.
which, I mean, that's what we're here for.
It's true.
Getting like, those characters developed and...
Which was so good in the first few issues. So yes. I'm glad that that's not lost.
Yeah.
Like, even though there's a lot of quick things happening, like, oh, there's a great beast. Oh, there's an egg monster.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sort of bouncing from that to the other. There's a lot of thought bubbles happening,
mm-hmm.
especially for Elizabeth to give us a glimpse as to who she is.
Yeah. And I really like Elizabeth. I think that she is a fun character and getting to see more of her. Like, she starts cooking as a member of the team now.
Oh.
Because
but she's not cooking eggs.
No one's cooking eggs right now. Just go to that burned out husk of a house.
Yeah.
So, in general, you liked these issues?
I did.
All right. Our next Alpha Flight episode is going to be X-Men and Alpha Flight.
Oh, okay.
Those two issues written by Chris Claremont.
Oh.
Yeah. I actually got them signed at the Uncanny Experience.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be an adventure
with
X-Men. We'll have little cameos. How fun.
Yes. We haven't had them for a while.
We haven't. So, and this will be the last time we see any of the cast of X-Men for a hot second. Like, Wolverine will come back.
Oh.
But not for quite a while.
Oh. I mean, one corner of the thruple is gone.
Yeah.
So.
All right, everyone. Well, we hope you have a fantastic week. Again, check out our fundraiser for Outfront Minnesota. Join us if you can.
Yes.
For the virtual program. And we will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.